And so please join me in welcoming up Mr. Richard James.
Thank you, sir. Hey, everybody. How are we doing today so far? All right? All right, good. I tell you, it's a tough act to follow. We got Dave, we've got Chris, we've got Dave Danielson, and we've gotten some great information. I don't know about you, but I've been taking tons and tons of notes, and I realize that right now my responsibility is to be interesting enough so that none of you have to get up and go to the bathroom because we went straight without any breaks, okay? So I'm going to try to do that, and I'm going to try to give you at least one good idea, because I don't know about you, but when I come to these events, I like to get at least one good idea that I can actually take home, put into practice, and get a return on investment for the time and the money that I put into it. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay, good. So I'm going to try to give you at least one good idea, hopefully more. But before I do, I got to admit, I'm the second speaker after lunch. The sugars are starting to break down a little bit. Every now and then I'm seeing somebody nod off, so I need you to stand up for me. Come on, stand up for me right now. Stand up for me. All right, I know we got to get the blood moving. There we go. Okay, good. Now let's get the hands in the air. Hands in the air. Good. Okay, hands out in front of us. Hands out in front of us. Thumbs in the air. Left hand down. Leaves it with the right hand up. Perfect position to make an agreement. Sorry, no, that was corny. Here's the deal. I agree to be as good of a teacher as I possibly can today, and I'm not going to cajole you or try to sell you anything. That's not because I don't like to sell. I love to sell, but that's not what today is about. Today is about me giving you pure content. What I'd ask in return from you is when I ask you a question, you be responsive. Can all of you do that for me?
Yes.
All right, so let's try it. Right now, we're going to give it a try. When I say guess what, I want you to say what? Guess what?
What?
Awesome. What is, I need you to keep standing for just a second, because I'm liable to say something today that's going to invoke some kind of feeling in you that's going to say, Richard, you just don't understand. My business isn't like that. Or, Richard, you just don't understand my people. My employees, it's not going to work with them. Or, Richard, you don't understand where I live. If you knew where I lived, you wouldn't be giving me this advice. And listen, I get all that. I really do. I get some of them are really valid. The problem is that I believe at the core there's a thread that runs through all businesses, and that today I'm going to show you that core, and I'd like you to momentarily suspend your disbelief so that you can buy in with me and say, how can we do this? Can you guys do that with me?
Yes.
Okay, great. We're going to make sure that you do. I'm going to ask you to take a vow. So if you would raise your right hand, I know you've all done this before. Come on, it's not that hard. Turn and face everybody. Anybody, twos, threes, individuals, I don't care how you do it. Go ahead, do it for me right now. There you go. And just say, repeat after me. My business,
is not different
from yours. Congratulations. Have a seat. Give yourself a round of applause. All right, good. We're moving in the right direction. Now, some of you might be wondering why in the world I have any credibility to be up here whatsoever besides the fact that I shaved my head and grew a goatee just to look like Dave, right? By the way, did anybody notice Dave got the memo at least on top? Chris got the memo. I got the memo. But Dave Danielson, he's the only guy up here with hair? I mean, really? I thought everybody got the memo. So here's the fact. I have a very diverse background. Okay, very diverse. I've got some fantastic winning stories, and I have some great crash and burn stories. And I don't know about you, but I think I've learned more from my losers than I have from my winners. Would everybody agree with that? Yeah, okay. So I'm going to give you a bit of my background so you can know where I come from. It's really important that you know where I come from. And I started in the insurance business. And that's where I learned how to build a system for sales. I am a systems guy by nature. That doesn't mean computer systems necessarily. That means a system or a process of doing things. And I learned to sell. I love to sell. And I enjoyed that business. But I was young and dumb. And my uncle offered me an opportunity to learn how to become a man and learn how to run a business. And I jumped at that opportunity. So I went into the funeral business. Yeah, I know I'm going to be the last one to let you down, right? Yeah. Listen, there's about as many jokes in the funeral business as there is in legal business. I sit squarely in both. So at Thanksgiving dinner, I am the butt of many, many jokes. But I love the funeral business. It was really good to me. I love the thank you notes that I got from clients. I love the checks that I got from families, for sure. But I tell you, what I love most is that we had one location when I was 25. I had three locations by the time I was 28. And I had to build a system to duplicate myself professionally in all three of those locations because I couldn't be at three places at once. And as bankruptcy firms, a lot of you folks have multiple locations. And so you have to build systems to duplicate yourself over multiple locations. Now, as much as I love the funeral business, I love sales and marketing more. I really did. But I couldn't figure out a way to hang a sign on the side of the funeral home that said, buy one, get one free, and get any real results, right? So I ended up buying a pet supply company, of all things, about 3,000 mom and pop pet stores all across the country. We sold aquarium ornaments. Yeah, aquarium ornaments. We became the third largest supplier of aquarium decor in the United States, and that's where I got my master's degree in system building. We manufactured product. I was in China a few times a year. We had warehouses, and we had to market the product and sell the product and customer service, and I had to build a system for every single one of those things. And so along the way, I ended up mastering all this systems building. As I said, it's my master's degree in systems building. Around 2008, 2009, we figured out that fish, they're just not as cool as cats and dogs because, well, fish don't fetch, right? So we found out that the recession was going to affect that business, and I had to figure out something else to do. Started working in a mastermind group where you get like-minded individuals together and start working on each other's businesses, and the one guy worked with lawyers. He had a systems problem, and they were broken, so he asked me to fix them, and I did. And when I did that, he said, "Do you think this will work for my clients?" I said, "Well, I don't see why not." So I started traveling the country teaching something that I called the DNA of the autonomous attorney, the DNA of the seven-figure law firm. And one day, somebody heard me speak and came up to me and said, "Does this stuff really work?" And I said, "Well, yeah, it really works." He said, "Would you like to prove it?" And I said, "What do you have in mind?" He said, "Well, I'm opening a new firm. And if you're interested, I'd like you to come try all your crazy ideas as long as you protect my license and we do it together and we go off and we can build this firm together. And if it works, you can tell your story. And if it doesn't work, well, you get to fail miserably in a public forum." And so I took that chance because I was excited about it, and we built it together, kneecap to kneecap. And we went from $0 in gross sales to $3.5 million in gross sales in 2.5 years. Now that's a great story. But guess what? Again, guess what? It's not the point. The point of the story is that there was a thread that ran through all of those businesses, a system that I used to build them all. The thing is, I didn't realize it when I was building the insurance business. I don't know that I fully realized it when I built the funeral business, but I did figure it out in the pet supply business, and I certainly did it on purpose in the legal business. So the question I have for you is, would you like to know the system that I used to build all those companies with? Excellent. Thank you. You're being a great crowd. So when I started thinking about systems when I was growing, I thought to myself, what am I? And I realized I'm a fundamentalist. So I teach fundamentals. I believe it's the core value of everything that we do. And when I started thinking about that, there was one guy that I thought taught fundamentals better than anybody else. It's this guy. You guys know who that is? John Wooden. Amazing coach, right? 7 championships in a row, 10 in a period of 12 years. Unbelievable coach. And he started every year the same way. He'd get his players in the room, right? He'd line them all up, freshmen and upperclassmen, and he'd say, "Now I'm going to teach you the fundamentals that you need to know to be successful on my basketball team." And the freshmen would get all excited, and they're going to learn. And he'd say, "Now take off your socks and shoes." And they'd say, "What?" And so he'd then show them how to take the sock and put it on so that that little green line wasn't under the pinky toe and there was no wrinkles in the sock and pulled all the way up over the calf. And then he would show them how to loosen the laces from the top all the way down to the bottom and pull the tongue out, slip it over their foot, and then tighten it from the bottom all the way to the top and tie it once and tie it twice and really tight double knot. Eventually, one of the kids would mumble, "Why are we learning how to tie our shoes?" He'd say, "Here's why. See that court out there? We're going to spend a lot of time on that court. And if you have a wrinkle in your sock and that cord is as hard as it is, you're liable to get a blister. And if you get a blister, you might not be able to practice. And if you can't practice on my team, you don't play. And if you don't play, I'm going to have to start somebody else in your place. And if I have to start somebody else in your place, you might not get back in the game again. But worse, if you have a loose shoelace and at the end of a big game you turn over the ball, that turnover might cost us a game. And at the end of that game, if we lose, one loss is the difference between a national championship and going home. And I'm not going to risk a national championship because I didn't teach you the fundamentals. Well, that's how I feel about your practices. I love that story because I don't want to risk a national championship of your practice because I didn't take the time to teach you the fundamentals. And the national championship for your practice, in my opinion, is a practice that supports your lifestyle rather than undermines your lifestyle. Would you guys like to know how to do that? Excellent. Good. So in my book, Discover the Acres of Diamonds, it's kind of a short book. I call it a shook. Okay, it's not very long, but it gets to the point. I revealed 2 fundamental things. The first are these things that I call diamonds, the unconverted leads in your practice. Today, I'm going to talk about 4 of them. And the second thing I do is I reveal the system that you need to unveil those diamonds for you. And that system is the fundamentals of a bankruptcy firm. And I call that the perfect client life cycle, a perfect client life cycle. Now, the perfect client life cycle is just that. It's a system. Now, I believe that systems should run your business and people should run your systems. Systems should run your business and people should run your systems. Now, this is no disrespect to Chris and what he said earlier about people. I think that you should treat your clients well, and I think that you should treat your employees well. I don't think this is an either or. I think this is a both and. However, I believe fundamentally in my heart that if we have the proper systems, we can set our clients up and our employees up for better success. We agree with that? Yeah. Okay, good. So let's go through this system real quick. It's the concept of taking leads to appointment sets, to shows, to hires, to paid in fulls, to referrals. Now, before those of you who already do this gloss over on me, don't. Because the true secret about this system is what I call the little hinges that swing the big doors. It's the conversion points. That last line in that thing is conversion, because this is the conversion between the leads and the sets and the shows and the hires and the paid in fulls and the referrals. That's the secret of your business. If we can get this system right in your business, you can reveal all of your strengths and all of your weaknesses. All of your strengths and all of your weaknesses. Would you like to know how to put this system into your practice? Good. Let's go on. We're going to talk about lead generation. I'm going to unpack this for you one step at a time. Each one of these stages I'm going to talk about, I'm going to teach you how to build the system. I'm going to tell you why you should build the system, and hopefully I'm going to entertain you along the way and give you some good nuggets. Now, what is a lead exactly? Well, a lead is anybody who raises their hand. They say they're interested either by phone or by email or by web forms or chat, or they fill out snail mail, or for God's sakes, they walk into your office. I don't care if they send a carrier pigeon. They say they're interested, they're a lead. Well, here's the big question, what's not a lead? Well, like I was on the phone with a prospect the other day, and I asked a pretty standard question when I'm on the phone with a prospect. I say, how many leads do you generate every single month? And he said, oh, I don't know, let me go to my calendar and I count them up. I go, well, what are you gonna count on your calendar? He says, well, I'm gonna count the appointments. I said, well, no, I asked you what leads you had. He goes, well, that is what the leads. I said, well, no, that you're jumping ahead, that's appointments. And he said, well, what's the difference? I said, well, a lead is anybody who sets an appointment, anybody who doesn't set an appointment. And he said to me, well, I don't keep track of anybody who doesn't set an appointment. Diamond number one, this isn't in the book, write it down. Diamond number one, the unconverted lead of no set. Anybody who calls the office and doesn't set an appointment is your first opportunity. His biggest problem was that he wasn't keeping track of every single piece of information about every single lead every single time. Now, a lot of you say to me, well, why? What does it matter? Well, let me tell you why. Let me illustrate it. So when we built that firm, when I left, we had 175 ways to make the phone ring. 175 ways to make the phone ring. And we use something called Authorship, Celebrity, and Expert, ACE. It's a principle that I teach. I've taught it for years. Authorship, Celebrity, and Expert, which means basically you write a book, and you use the book as a lead magnet, and we generate leads that way, okay? And we used to go on TV. And when we went on TV, we would spend about $800 for an ad, and we'd get about 8 leads, okay? And when we got 8 leads, it cost us about $100 a lead. For anybody who's buying leads, you know that's kind of expensive. But we made it work until we went to a marketing conference, and we heard one basic idea. And that one basic idea, when we implemented it, took us from 8 leads to 80 leads. Would you guys like to know what one idea we used to go from 8 leads to 80 leads?
Yes.
Okay. It's called a deadline. Write this down. It's not in your book. An ad isn't an ad unless it's a deadline. Better said, a direct response ad isn't a direct response ad if it doesn't have a deadline. If there's one thing you can walk away from today is wherever you've got advertising, in whatever form, ask yourself, how can I add a deadline to it? If you can add a deadline to it, you can make it work better. That includes your website, your newspaper ads, your Yellow Page ad, TV, radio, wherever you can, add a deadline. If you can add a deadline, you can make it better. Now, the question is, what do we do with that, and why is that such a big deal? Well, listen, if we didn't know this information, I wouldn't be able to tell which one of the 175 lead sources was working. So while everybody else in the area was using a shotgun, we were using a laser beam. It's a huge difference. We knew what worked. Most attorneys I work with, not just bankruptcy attorneys, business owners in general, but certainly attorneys, fall into the theory of, I know 50% of my marketing is working, I just don't know what 50% is, right? So guess what? Guess what? All right, I'm going to have to do this more often. So the point is that that's not the point. This whole thing isn't the point of the 175 lead sources or what we did with TV. The point is the system, because that's what this whole presentation about, is the system. So I need to show you a system about how to do this. Now, Dave Danielson did a great job of showing you the cloud, okay? You learned about how to use the cloud and software, and his system would work for this. I'm not going to talk about software. I'm going to keep this really, really simple. Is everybody okay with me keeping this really, really simple?
Yes.
Okay, good. So every system has three fundamental parts. The first is harvesting. The second is investing and reporting. And the third is automation. By the way, I get it that I talk at about 250 minutes, words a minute with occasional gusts up to 500. So if I go too fast, the key answer key is in the back of the section, right? So if anybody didn't figure that out yet. So if I go too fast and you miss something, you'll be able to get it in the back of the section. I want to take automation and I want to put it up in the parking lot for a section, for a second, because I'm not going to talk about automation today. If we talk about automation, I'm going to spend a lot of time on software. And Dave's product already does a good job of that. If you want to learn about automation, talk to them. What I am going to talk about is harvesting and inspecting and reporting. Harvesting and inspecting reporting is this. Harvesting says, I'm going to harvest every single piece of information about every single lead, every single time. Inspecting and reporting is on you guys. That's the truth. This whole thing only works if you believe in what I'm telling you right now. If you believe that the system that I'm giving you right now is actually as important as I'm telling you that it is. Because if you don't believe that, you're not going to inspect it, or you're not going to inspect the person who's supposed to be inspecting it, whatever that looks like in your particular business. You have to commit to inspecting this, so you have to make sure you believe it. If you don't believe it, it's not going to work. Trust me. So let's talk about how do we harvest. I'm going to give you a really, really simple system. I'm not going to take you back to pen and paper. That's where we could go with it. But I'm going to, you know, there used to be a story that I read about a guy who used stacks of paper, and one had a green brick, one had a blue brick, and one had a red brick, right? The red bricks were people who didn't buy. The blue bricks were people who were interested but didn't buy. And the green bricks were people who bought. Now, I'm not going to take you back to the bricks, but I am going to take you back to the beginning, and we're going to use something called a spreadsheet. Not any old spreadsheet. Dave did a great job of telling you that there's shared software out there on Google called Google Drive, and you can have a database that everybody in your office can use at the same time. Now, if you already have fancy software, go ahead and use it. If you're going to get Compass, go ahead and do that. But if you want to build something that you can get in the habit of doing this to see if you're willing to commit to this process, this is the simplest and fastest way that you can do it. Because if you have four employees, everybody can access it simultaneously. With a regular spreadsheet, you cannot, okay? Now, in that Google Drive doc, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to list a couple of pieces of data that you may not think about, and the rest you'll already know. The first one is lead source. So when I talked about having 175 lead sources, how do I know which lead source worked if I don't track it? So the first column's got to be lead source. That's not in your book, so if you want to write it down, you can. Anybody's welcome to email me later if they actually want a copy of the spreadsheet. The second one is referral name, because if the lead source is a referrer, you want to make sure you get the name of the referring party because you want to be able to say thank you later on. The rest is name, rank, and serial number. You get that, right? Name, rank, and serial number. Now, here's the thing. What should you get a name, rank, and serial number that you might not think of? Caller ID. Caller ID is something a lot of people don't think about getting in there. I'm not going to get into why I can't. It takes too much time. Just trust me. Make sure you're harvesting the caller ID from the phone. Now, the question somebody asked me is, well, how do we get the lead source? How do you know where they called from? Well, the worst way to get the lead source is by doing it by report, which means what? People come into your office and they fill out the intake sheet and you say, how'd you hear about us? And they say, billboard. Well, they really saw you on TV, but on the way into the office, they saw the billboard, right? That's the worst way to do it. The best way to do it is have a tracking line. Have a tracking line for every single piece of advertising. If you ever bought ads in the Yellow Book, you know that they wanted to give you a tracking line for you. That's not enough. I want you to get your own tracking line because I want you to be in control of what's working, and I want you to add on the tracking line a whisper feature. The whisper feature just basically says they're going to whisper in your ear and they're going to say lead source one or lead source two or radio or television or whatever so that the person on the other end can hear where it came from and they can simply put it in that Google Drive document. Okay, again, we're building a system so that you guys can start to measure this. You're going to see how this pans out here in a second. Now, the next thing we have to talk about is inspection. Well, what is inspection exactly? Well, inspection is necessary. Why? Because there are three things that happen in every single business, right? There's what the business owner wants to be happening, there's what the business owner thinks is happening, and then there's what's actually happening, right? Well, the question is, how often should you inspect that this stuff is being done the way you want it to be done? And the answer is, each and every day. And the question is, well, why do you have to do it each and every day? And the answer to that is two reasons. One, if you don't do it each and every day, here's what's going to happen. You're going to come home all excited from the event. You're going to tell your team to do it. They're going to put it in place for the first two or three or four days. Then you're not going to inspect it. Then they're going to take it and put it in the bottom drawer of their filing cabinet, and you're going to forget about it because you're so busy doing your legal work of going to 341s. Everybody agree with that?
Yes.
Okay, so you have to inspect it. Coming back to the most important part of this process is you making sure the inspection of this is being done. So if you've got the commitment, we can get it done. The second reason is really, really important because it gives you a feel for the pulse of your business. You are in the sales-driven, client-focused business. Whether you know it or not, you're in the sales-driven, client-focused business. When I'm done giving you this system today, you're going to see how the system I gave you is going to give you a pulse of what's going on in your business. Well, how do you do that? It's simple. You have a spreadsheet. Somebody in your office is in charge of it, not you. You tell them every day, I want you to take that spreadsheet and copy it and send me the data for that day in an email. Simple. Don't overcomplicate it. One email from them at the end of every day to you. At the end of every day, when you're done, all you're going to do is say to them either, hey, thanks for the spreadsheet, or hey, I noticed we got a lot of referrals today, or hey, I noticed there was a lot of no-shows today. Just comment on it. That's all you need to do. Comment on it. One line, one word, I don't care what it is. Then if they don't give it to you, you have to say, hey, Sally, I didn't get it today. And if you do that, Sally will send it, and then it will stay on track. So your job is just to ask the question, okay? And so if you do this the way that I'm telling you to do it, you're going to get a pulse for your business, and you're going to have a system that works. Okay, is everybody tracking with me so far? That was the desert part of this speech, okay? That was the long, drawn-out how to do this, okay? So now I'm going to start breaking into what can we add to this system so that you can get the pulse. The next stage is converting to an appointment. So this stage is basically judged as a percentage of the stage before. So you have to have a good quality count on your lead count in order to have a good quality count on your conversion from leads to sets, okay? Which means it's kind of like building a deck. When I built my first deck, my grandfather walked up and said, well, that's cattywampus. I didn't know what cattywampus was, but I knew that he pointed out that I was off on the first board, which made every board thereafter off. And I knew that I then had to rebuild it. So what he basically taught me was you got to get the first one right. So you got to get that first one right, that first commitment level right to get the rest of this right. But once you do, you're in good shape. So now we've got the data about the appointment set. And people say to me all the time, well, what should the appointment set rate be? Well, I hate to sound like a lawyer, but it all depends. It all depends on, is your referral rate really high? Do you get most of your businesses from referrals? If you do, then your appointment set rate may be 90%. If you buy some business, like you advertise, you buy leads from third-party lead sources, and you have referrals too in a mix, you might be 60, 65%, 70% maybe. But if you're new, and you're just doing leads, like generating leads through that ACE principle, or just generating leads from no referrals at all, you might be really low. You might be as low as 30 or 40%. And that sounds crazy, but if you're using a lead magnet model, yeah, it might be that low, but it's a lower percentage of a much larger number because we drive more leads that way. Well, I had a client up in Seattle who, when they started with the authorship, celebrity, and expert principle like I taught you. They gave away the book, and they drove leads, and their conversion was 15%. And I'm like, boy, this is trouble. Red flag area. We got to go into inspection mode. What's going on? What's being said? We listened to the calls. Everything was fine. We inspected. They were saying what they were supposed to say. We pulled the data. Oh, 4.5 minute hold times. 4.5 minute hold times. Everybody was falling off. Their abandon rate was through the roof. So we made one change, and we went from 15% to 30%. Would you like to know what one change we made to go from 15% to 30%?
Yes.
Okay, that one change was we gave it to a call center who was scripted and had license to schedule the appointment on our calendar. Both of those are very important. Scripted and had license to schedule on our calendar. That's how we maximize that rate. So the trick to maximizing your conversion from sets to leads is having a live person answer the phone. having a live person answer the phone. But guess what? All right, the answer is, it's about the system, right? It's about the system. This isn't the point. The point isn't the story. The point is the system. So what do? All we have to do is add one little column to our Google Drive spreadsheet that says, did they set an appointment? True or false? That's it. I don't want to boil it down to its simplest function if I don't have to, but this is how simple it is, okay, guys and gals? Just true or false, they set an appointment. Now you know, everybody you have every single piece of data about every single lead, and now you know every one, did they set an appointment or not? You can easily get your appointment set count, and you can get your conversion level, okay? Everybody tracking with me so far? Yeah. Okay, on to the next slide. We're going to move on to show rates. Now, the show rate is what? It's anybody who attends the appointment, right? So this is anybody who attends the appointment, whether they're a phone appointment or whether they're a physical appointment. This is somebody who attends the appointment. And the show rate is dependent on the number of people who set an appointment. So you have to have the previous data to have good data on the next point, okay? And a lot of people say to me, well, what should the right show rate be in bankruptcy? Well, this depends too, but it depends geographically almost more heavily than anything else. I find people that there's some parts of the country that they can make every mistake in the world and still 70% of the people are going to show up. They don't have to take any necessary action. They just show up to their appointments. It also depends if you're getting a high level of referrals. You get a high level of referrals, more people are going to show up. But if you're out there buying business or you're new like we were when we started, it's going to be really low. We were horrible. We were at like 35% when we started. But we made one change and went from 35% to 45%. Would you like to know what we did to go from 35% to 45%?
Yes.
So remember we told you we gave away the book, right? Well, we had a little bit of a problem. We gave away the book, but we didn't have a book to give yet. And so what we had to do is it was written, it just wasn't printed. And so what we did is I went and literally printed it on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, and we signed it, and then we stamped it with Rough Draft, and we stuck a letter in there that said, we wanted to get you this manuscript as fast as possible in a Rough Draft form, put it out in the mail, and got it going. And because we got it to everybody's hands, we saw the set rate, or the show rate, go from 35% to 45%. But guess what? That's not the point. The point is the database. The point is the system. The point is, on the Google spreadsheet, all you got to do is, did they show up? True or false? That's it. And now every day you're going to get your data. I've got their information, what lead source they came from. Did they set an appointment? Did they show up? Everybody feeling this so far? How we can get this data every single day? How you're going to get a pulse of your business every single day? Can you feel it?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, let's move on to the new client. Question is, what do we do to get new clients? Well, you can do a lot of things to get new clients, right? You can choreograph the sales process. You can get new clients more if you have higher rate of referrals, which is why I love referrals so much. You can micromanage the client experience. I'm going to talk about that tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss that tomorrow morning for breakfast. We're talking about micromanaging the client experience. You can script everybody. We went as far as measuring which room worked better. We had three rooms when we started. We had a conference room. We had a president's room with the big heavy desks. And we had a kitchen table room. And I don't know about you, but coming from the insurance business, I thought for sure the kitchen table room was going to work better. Would you guys like to know which room worked better?
Yes.
I hope you're not as disappointed as I was. There was no difference. None. We did all that measuring. No difference at all. So disappointing, right? But here's what I don't want you to miss. I don't want you to miss this. The biggest, most important point you want to miss is that you can never go too far with this. I think I jumped ahead on Nathan there. And there you go. You can never get too carried away with measuring your data. Why? Because even though there was no difference in the room, what there was a difference in was who was in that room. And because we were measuring what room was in, we measured who was in that room. So some of you meet with all the clients yourself. Some of you have other attorneys meeting with clients on your behalf. Some of you want to duplicate yourself. Well, you're going to want to know which one converted better, right? And so guess what? That's not the point. The point is, if you have the right system and use the Google Doc, all we have to do is put in there, did they hire, true or false? All we have to do, if we want to know what room, which you don't need to do, I just told you it's not going to make a difference, put in there which room and you can measure that. Or put in which consultant or which attorney met with them to see which one had a better hire rate. So all you have to do is add that to that database. Once you've got this thing moving, think about this. All this information I'm telling you to harvest is already located on either your intake sheet or some form that you've already have people filling out as they're coming in and out of your office, right? So only takes one person to take all this data and put it in that spreadsheet every day. This is not an overly complicated, overly difficult system for you to do. And as we're going through this, I want you to remember that if you think about any of this in the concept of percentage, in the concept of cost, don't make that mistake. We're talking about investment, okay? So when you have to invest in a system to put in your business or the time you're going to put in your business, it's a ROI, a return on investment for the dollars you put in, what you're going to get back. That's what this is all about, all right? So remember, the person who hires you is fundamentally the person who decides to hire your firm, and the person who hires you is dependent on the person who showed. So you have to have the right number of shows to get the right percentage of hires. And so that means that this is all the same all the way through. The foot bone's connected to the ankle bone, right? This is all connected. Everything is interconnected in this. You guys are getting that by now. Now, let's move on to getting paid. Getting paid. In bankruptcy, this is a really, really big subject, all right? Really big subject. I dare say it's the biggest stumbling block for most bankruptcy firms. Two areas, price and collections. It's also the area that, remember I said, Richard, my business is different, Richard, where I live is different, Richard, my clients are different. This is the area I get that the most. So I'm fully aware of that when I go through this process, okay? We're gonna focus on price and collections. I'm gonna focus on price first and then collections. And for the purposes of this discussion, I understand there are people in the room that do a lot of 13s, mostly 13s. And so for your purposes, you might think this doesn't pertain to me. I would dare say everybody in the room does some sevens, and we're gonna focus on sevens for this discussion. Most attorneys, when I talk to them, tell me that the concept of price is this. When I ask how they came up with their price for a Chapter 7, they tell me they looked at what everybody else was charging and they charged about the same. Or worse, they tell me they looked at what everybody else was charging and they charged a little bit less. I don't think that way. I can't afford to think that way. Because when I tell you why, you're going to understand why we can't afford to think that way. In order to determine price, you have to know what your cost per case is. You have to know what your cost per case is. Your cost per case has two numbers that aren't on this sheet. The first is your cost of acquisition, your cost to acquire a client. Your second is the cost to get a case out the door. Let's focus on cost to get a case out the door. I have done this with literally hundreds of attorneys at this point, so I don't think this is a theory any longer. This is a fact. If you take the number of expenses on your profit and loss, lop off marketing expenses, lop off one-time expenses from that period, and lop off any erroneous owner's benefits that shouldn't be included in there, divide in the number of cases that you file, you're going to get your basic cost to put a case out the door. I know for a fact that it's going to run somewhere between $950 and $1,350. It just is, no matter how you do this. And once you get to that number, you realize that, oh my gosh, I've got a big number that I've got to cover before I even get started. Well, once we add in the cost to acquire a case, we're going to have to add these two things together. And we know that when you're out there buying business, whether it's third-party lead sources or you're doing your own advertising, it's going to run you somewhere between $350 and $500 to buy a case, give or take, somewhere in that range. This is a fact. Now, you might be getting them less. If you've got higher referral rate, it'll be lower for sure. But if you're buying business, meaning you're advertising and making the phone ring, it's going to cost you somewhere between $350 and $500. When we started, we knew that it was going to be somewhere between about $500 and about $1,300 to get a case out the door, which means we were going to have $1,800 in before we even move forward. Would you like to know, we had about 80 people hiring the firm when I left at that point. Would you like to know what our average Chapter 7 fee was? Yes. $2,375, give or take. Now, before you go into, well, that's because it was, I can't do this because, remember, you took an oath, okay? You can't say that, all right? I have worked with countless attorneys to help them increase their price. I dare say that I can change most of your practices by just focusing on Chapter 7 price alone. And you know where it lies mostly? Right here, between your two ears, okay? That's where we have to get over the change. You guys and your and all the, not you guys, but all the attorneys in the industry seem to have tried to train the clients that it's about price. Clients don't care about price as much as you think that they do. If you build the right marketing funnel, clients don't care about price as much as you think that they do. I promise you. I could spend a whole day on this subject. I'm not. Suffice it to say, you need to get price right. Now, the second part is collections. Most attorneys, when they work with Chapter 7s, tell me that the way that they collect their money is some version of pay me whatever you're going to pay me down today, and then pay me what you can, when you can, based on the pressure the creditor's giving you. The creditors are our favorite friends, they would say to me, right? Okay, so let me ask you this question. If you guys aren't trusting your money and you're accepting an earned on receipt, and they're paying payments on a Chapter 7, does that affect cash flow in your business? Okay, so now, how important is cash flow in your business? Scale of 1 to 10. 1 being not so important, 10 being ridiculously important. How important is it?
11.
11. It ranks right up there with oxygen, right? It's kind of important. Okay, so here's my question. If cash flow ranks right up there with oxygen, why do we let people who are notoriously horrible at paying their bills manage your cash flow? They're there to file bankruptcy, folks. I'm not downing them. They're just not really good money managers at this point in their life. And yet we're leaving it in their hands to determine your cash flow. Would you like to know how to get more oxygen in your practice?
Yes.
Okay, I've got a better way. I believe you've got three responsibilities as a business owner in a law firm. The first is a fiscal responsibility. That's where you make sure you charge the right price and you have the right collection process. We're going to talk about that in a second. The second is an ethical responsibility. You didn't think you were going to get talked about ethics here. You're not getting any CLEs, sorry, but I am going to give you a little lesson on my opinion of ethics. And the third is a communication issue, so a client communication. What's the number one complaint about law firms from consumers to the Bar Association? Lack of communication, right? We're going to fix number three in a second. Here's what we do. We just make some simple rules. First rule, anybody can hire the firm in a Chapter 7 for whatever amount of money down you say that they can pay you, except they all have to go on a plan, which means if they say, my Uncle Charlie's going to give me $1,000 next Thursday and we're going to pay you in full, that's fine. That's a payment plan of one next Thursday. The second thing that we're going to do is we're going to take that plan and we're going to give it to Sally in our office. Sally in our office is going to be in charge of making outbound phone calls, and she's not going to call reactively. Not reactively, because most attorneys, the way that they tell me they do it is if they don't pay or if somebody doesn't pay their bill, they send them notices, they'll get on the phone and they'll call them and they'll chase them down. Well, all you became is another bill collector. You're one of them all of a sudden. You don't feel good about it, the client doesn't feel good about it, and you get less referrals because of it. So here's my plan. We're going to take the payment plan. Let's say they're going to pay you over 6 months. Every time their payment is due, you're going to get on the phone with them proactively. And Sally's going to use the payment plan as a calling monitor to pick up the phone and call them. And they're not going to call them about the fact that they owe money. They're going to call them about the big five, right? Divorce, medical bills, foreclosure, repo, garnishment, lawsuit, whatever it is. They're going to get on the phone and they're going to build a relationship with your client. Welcome them to the firm. They're going to talk to them and greet them warmly. They're going to get on their wavelength. So when that Mr. Smith falls off plan, when he eventually will, we know that, they're more likely to take Sally's calls because we've built a relationship with them. Does that make sense to everybody? If we do that, do we effectively get rid of the third problem? Yes? Okay, good. So that's the three-pronged plan. We have a fiscal responsibility, ethical responsibility, and we're going to use those to nail out the problem of lack of communication. And so, by the way, the fourth diamond, and I don't know if I gave you two other diamonds, the three diamonds that you should have so far are no sets, no shows, and no hires. Those are the three unconverted leads. I probably didn't say out of my mouth and I should have. No sets, no shows, no hires. The fourth diamond is off plan, because we're going to measure Sally by simply whether she's on plan or off plan. How many people she's keeping on plan and how many people she's got off plan. And so the fourth unconverted lead are people who are off plan. So let's move on to the guess what stage. Guess what? This is about the system. So I've given you some good information, but let's come back to the Google Doc. Take that Google Doc and think about this. All we've got to do is put in there, we know that they hired, we know what room they used, we knew which consultant they used or attorney they used. Now we just have to know whether they did a Chapter 7 or a Chapter 13. We just have to know what price we charge them and whether they're on plan or off plan. And now Sally, your call person, can use that exact same sheet to communicate with all of those people who are off plan and on plan proactively. Make sense? Okay, next stage, obtaining referrals. Basically, a referral is what? Somebody who's recommended to come to your firm to do business. And we know that referrals, by nature, are more likely to set an appointment, more likely to show, more likely to hire, more likely to pay your fee, more likely to stay on plan, more likely to refer other business. So my question is, if that's the case, why in the world? Why in the world do we not, most attorneys, not know the rate of referral by definition of based on how many hires we have, how many referrals we get, what percentage we have? Why do most attorneys not know that? I don't know, but I do know that the system that I just gave you solves that problem for you. Because I told you in the lead source, the next column over, you just put the referral name. So you can not only know if they were referral as a lead source, you can also know who referred them and you can say thank you. So this system solves that. Now, would you guys like to know how to get more referrals? Okay, don't miss breakfast tomorrow. Seriously, I can do a day on referrals. We don't have enough time for me to do it today. Don't miss breakfast tomorrow. Tomorrow is about micromanaging the client experience. Number one way to get more referrals. I promise you, you make it to breakfast, you're going to walk out of there with a bunch of ideas on how to get more referrals, okay? It starts at 7. Breakfast is open at 6:30. I will start sharp at 7. Buses leave at 8, so be there on time, please. Okay, now that I've taught you this system, has it made sense at some level? Did I keep my promise and keep it simple? Okay, we're going to give you a worksheet. Next page is a worksheet. This is basically where you're going to take and you're going to mark down your numbers. Some of you are going to know these numbers by heart, hopefully. Some of you may not know them at all. Some of you may have to take a swag. You know what a swag is? A sophisticated wild-ass guess. Sorry, Dan. Okay, some of you may have to take a swag, and that's okay, okay? Some of you may not know, and that's all right, because that means you could go from where you are to where you're going to be. Those of you who do know these numbers, ask yourself how often you're looking at them, because I promise you these should be looked at daily. Daily. And so you're going to be able to take this and use it for yourself. Now, I believe we should affect change in this, and so I believe that there is a way to affect change in these numbers, improve these numbers. Would you like to know how to affect change in these numbers? There are 5 senses of communication that we're going to use to affect change. The first one is email. The second one is the outbound phone call. The third one is text messaging. The fourth one is voice blasts. And then we have direct mail. Can anybody tell me what they believe is the number one on that list? Shout it out. Anybody? Phone calls. Outbound phone call. Number one overlooked and underutilized yet most powerful tool of any law firm. Number one. Number one, I promise you, if I was given nothing, if I was dropped in a law firm, in a bankruptcy firm, and I was forced to do something, the only thing that I would do is I would affect change in the price and collections, and I would put somebody on the phone to the unconverted leads. No sets, no shows, no hires. We'd make change like that. You want something to go back and get results for right away? Do that. That is going to make change in your business, all right? Here's the thing, folks. I believe that this is a system that if you master, you literally can get to your national championship. That you literally can change your life. But I believe you have to be committed to mastering it. And with that, I'm going to give you a poem. It's by Myra Brooks Welch, and I'm probably going to paraphrase, but it's called The Touch of the Master's Hand. And it goes like this. 'Twas battered and scarred, and the auctioneer thought it was barely worth its while to waste much time with the old violin, but he held it up with a smile. When my bid, good folks, he said, who'll start the bidding for me? $1? $1? Maybe two? $2? Who'll give three? $3 once, $3 twice, and going and gone. But no, from the back of the room, a gray-bearded man came forward and picked up the bow, wiping the dust from the old violin and tightening the loose strings. He began to play a melody so soft and sweet, sweet as the caroling angel sings. When it was finished in a voice that was quiet and low, the auctioneer said, what am I bidding for this old violin? And he held it up with a bow. $1,000? $2,000? Can I hear three? $3,000 going once, $3,000 going twice, and sold for $3,000. The crowd cheered, but some of them cried. What changed its worth? Swift came the reply, but the touch of the master's hand. Here's the point. The touch of the master's hand can change the worth of a violin. The touch of a master's hand can change the worth of a business. The business is your life. If you change the worth of a business, you change your life. I'm Richard James. I'm looking forward to helping you build your practice one system at a time. Thanks so much, everybody.